If you have been in my office, you know that I surround myself in post-it notes and sheets of paper hanging from every inch of the wall. Tweetable insights, some have said. These brief reminders keep me grounded in the work or focused on a particular goal. They remind me why I need to communicate in such a way or why others may be communicating in a style so different from my own. For example, church must be simple, different, and relevant. Or don't start with the problem. Or my favorite, surprised people behave poorly. You can ponder those as well, but the two quotes that I want us to really sit with today, or any time you find your way into my office for that matter, are these. First, it is not what do we believe, but what do we believe in. And then this one by Protestant theologian Walter Brueggemann, memory produces hope in the same way that amnesia produces despair. So again, it is not what do we believe, but what do we believe in, and memory produces hope in the same way that amnesia produces despair. For the past few months, I've been engulfing Rebecca Solnit's latest book, Hope in the Dark, in which each chapter's purpose is to build off of that Brueggemann quote, a reminder of the ways in which we can tell of a past that has nothing but defeats and cruelties and injustices, or of a past that was some lovely golden age now irretrievably lost. Or, she says, we can tell a more complicated and accurate story. One that has room for the best and worst, for atrocities and liberations, for grief and jubilation. The idea is, of course, when we only tell of despair and ignore or don't learn or forget by way of some other narrative, the times in which we find ourselves at a loss for what to do, for how to act, a cynic to optimism but a believer in hope, we will get stuck. But if there are, as Solnit says, we must create litanies or recitations or monuments to the victories within the human history of cruelty, litanies or recitations or monuments that are landmarks in everyone's mind, we will find ourselves connected not only to a greater and more true story about the human condition, but to an active and purposeful and forward-directed energy called hope. This week, I spoke with a number of our longer-term members about what life was like here at UUCWC in the late 80s and early 90s. Many of us, looking out here today, many of us can at least recall the story. It's the height of the AIDS crisis. Clergy of every stripe refuse to bless the dying but will bury the dead. But here the new minister says she will welcome anyone and everyone in this life, and especially the marginalized. If you read about it like I did when I sought an interview to serve this congregation, the next steps all sounded so correct, so healthy. Members of the congregation came forward, came out. They met on their own and then offered themselves to listening circles within the congregation. Ask anything you want, they said. An offering I cringe at every time I hear it. A flood of the questions I've never welcomed but also felt was my responsibility to answer come to mind, and I think they must have loved this place enough. And then soon after the vote, which we celebrate, for we hold the legacy of being the fourth welcoming congregation to LGBTQ people in America. No mentors in this work, no other UU churches who had perfected the process or knew what would happen next, no one to say, hey, be mindful of this or make sure you check in with that person or that gay and lesbian couple. Almost three decades later now, and here we are, in part defined by that time, with celebration. I revisit this story because memory produces hope in the same way that amnesia produces despair, and I have needed to be reminded that as we approach next week's vote on a banner, a public statement that attempts to give voice to our values, our rage, our grief, a crowded, colorful banner that lists statements of solidarity and love, statements of truth and inclusivity, I needed to be reminded that we've done this before. We've weathered uncomfortable conversations, and we have moved through right and healthy process. And best of all, decades later, we celebrate, we give thanks for the heavy lifting of the spirits who made this place a home for us now. An us that would look and sound and be very different if it wasn't for that time or those people. So you'd think, having been reminded of that, having seen that quote live in my office time and again, that I'd be sleeping better. That come April 2nd, I will stand tall and breathe deep and welcome right and healthy process that I believe will happen so dearly. The thing is, though, we all know that within such a story as this one, there is a more complicated and more accurate history. We lost some members during that time. Loved ones who this congregation claimed as friends and partners in faith, but individuals whose fear of becoming the gay church brought about ugly divisions and ultimate breaks of covenants and then of heart. The affirmation of same-sex couples and non-straight individuals was a learning for many in this time and an awkward, if not painful, one. There were things said that could not be undone and moments of silence that begged to be filled. There was anger at how long the process took and anger at how relationships that were once in sync now fell away in confusion over what the other could not feel, know, or understand. And just as an interesting parallel, I offer that at the same time that we were going through the gay church conversations, it was a time of growth and the first talks of expansion and a pending capital campaign. Sound familiar? This is the last Sunday in which, by theme, we will be talking about risk, though I imagine the topic will come up again. We have this suggestion within Unitarian Universalism that it is unnatural for us, the diverse and pluralistic and you on your journey and me on mine, us, that it is unnatural to speak with a shared singular voice. We love our distinctions and we grow from them. They are all just celebratory. But there are lines that create the Unitarian Universalist identity. Richard Gilbert writes, "Ours is a project in loving the neighbor near and distant, an endeavor that is squarely in humanity's hands, keeping in step with the long Unitarian Universalist tradition of trying to build the beloved community, a heaven on earth. Our congregations," he says, "seek to be communities of moral discourse and social action on the frontiers of living. The congregants become conspirators for beloved community, conspiracy meaning breathing together." We Unitarian Universalists, he concludes, are a spiritual center with a civic circumference. We have a proud history of repairing the world, and we live under a prophetic imperative to work for the beloved community. We covenant together to live out compassion, equity, and justice in communal life, and we are clear that some values are not optional. They must be lived. To refuse to act, to fail to live out our values, is to abdicate our role as spiritual and moral beings. I don't know what's to come a week from today. If we will attach ourselves to always imperfect words made public, if we will leave hurt or renewed, I can't know. But I do hope that in the coming days, we will each think of this place and not only consider the risk of having this conversation with one another, the risk of dissent, the risk of grief, but also the risk of doing nothing. We need not only tell the celebration of times past. There is hope in the accurate, complicated, and more true story in which we risked building the beloved community. This was never meant to be easy. Community, congregational living, faith, none of it. And so long as we think that, our stories will fail to help us weather the next wave. And this UUCWC deserves to not only live into the legacy of the audacious spirit of its past, but feel a sense of responsibility to those who came before by replicating their loyalty to this sacred and hard work of life shared with others. It is, as Reverend Kim Harvey writes in an adapted poem, "It takes courage to be crocus-minded. I'd rather wait until June, like wild roses, when the hazards of winter are safely behind and I'm expected and everything's ready for roses. But crocuses? Highly irregular. Knifing up through hard, frozen ground and snow, sticking their necks out because they believe in spring and have something personal and emphatic to say about it. I'm not by nature crocus-minded," she says. "Even when I have studied the situation and know there are wrongs that need righting, affirmations that need stating, and know that my speaking out may offend, for it rocks the boat. Well, I'd rather wait until June. Maybe later things will work themselves out and we won't have to make an issue of it. Forgive me. Wrongs won't work themselves out. Injustices and inequities and hurt don't just dissolve. Somebody has to stick their neck out. Somebody who cares enough to think through and work through hard ground because they believe they have something personal and emphatic to say about it. Me? Crocus-minded? Could it be that there are things that need to be said and I need to say them? I pray for courage." Not what do we believe, but what do we believe in? And memory produces hope in the same way that amnesia produces despair. So what are you, what will be your litanies, recitations, monuments that will be landmarks in your heart and mind in the coming days? May this time be one of them. Blessed be.